A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host for this journey into issues facing the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues these organizations are facing. Today, we'll look at what we can expect over the next few months as debate begins over funding for the National Endowment for the Arts. The budget proposal submitted by the Trump administration would eliminate the NEA, and we'll hear from the co-chairs of the Congressional Arts Caucus, Republican Leonard Lance and Democrat Louise Slaughter, about their expectations. I'll also talk with Matthew Sheftel, Dean of Rider University's Westminster College of the Arts, about how NEA funding has supported some of their recent programs. As part of A Tempo, we're pleased to bring you some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. The New York Philharmonic has turned to a familiar face for its next president and chief executive, announcing that Deborah Borda will return to the orchestra after more than 15 years at the Los Angeles Philharmonic. In a statement, the New York Philharmonic said Borda will begin in September, following the departure of Matthew Van Biesen, the Philharmonic's current president. Bill Thomas, senior vice president and chief operating officer of the New York Philharmonic, has been named as executive director, beginning May 1st. Borda takes on the leadership of the Philharmonic as it prepares to transition to a new music director and looks ahead to major renovations at its Lincoln Center home. According to the New York Times, Borda's decision to return to New York from Los Angeles was influenced in part with the help of Jaap van Zweden, who is slated to become the Philharmonic's next music director in 2018. Alan Gilbert, the current music director, is wrapping up his tenure at the end of this season. Work on David Geffen Hall is still in the planning process, with the opening now expected in the fall of 2022. According to the New York Times, the orchestra has run a deficit since 2000. Under Borda's supervision, the Los Angeles Philharmonic brought in the now superstar Gustavo Dudamel as music director, oversaw the creation and expansion of a successful youth music program modeled on Venezuela's El Sistema program, and has led successful fundraising efforts and strong financial oversight. A former professional violist, Borda served as executive director of the New York Philharmonic during the 1990s, following leadership roles at the San Francisco Symphony, St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and Detroit Symphony. In other personnel shifts, Opera Philadelphia has named Marita Altman as vice president of development, bringing her in from the Metropolitan Opera. Altman had served as director of major gifts at the Met since 2008. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. With the submission of the first budget proposal from the Trump administration, one of the agencies recommended for the chopping block is the National Endowment for the Arts. At just under $150 million in the current year, it represents less than 0.01% of total U.S. spending. There have been past efforts to defund the NEA, but observers have pointed out that this is the first time the effort has been led by the executive branch, not by Congress. In response to criticism, over the years, the NEA has shifted its granting priorities, spreading funding out across a variety of locales, from urban to rural and everything in between. Arts organizations are naturally rallying around the NEA, arguing that the loss of this funding source will weaken arts institutions of all sizes and roll back some of the gains made in recent years in making sure that a broad spectrum of the arts are accessible to audiences from all socioeconomic backgrounds, regardless of whether they live in large cities or small rural towns. The budget discussions will be front and center at this year's Arts Advocacy Day, an annual event scheduled this year for March 20th and 21st in Washington to lobby members of Congress to support the arts. In the statement, Americans for the Arts President and CEO Robert Lynch pointed to bipartisan support for the arts, saying the budget proposal, quote, stems from tired old ideas that show a lack of understanding of the important role that the NEA plays in America, end quote. Given the overall partisan nature of Washington politics today and some of the major policy shifts that Trump's budget represents, the arts might actually be one of the few areas that generates a relatively bipartisan show of support once the debate reaches Congress. Congressman Leonard Lance, a Republican from New Jersey, and Congresswoman Louise Slaughter, a New York Democrat, are the co-chairs of the Congressional Arts Caucus, and both have come out against the dissolution of the NEA. I reached out to speak with both of them about the proposal and the discussions ahead. While calling for a continuation in reining in the budget, Lance, in a statement, said that cuts to areas like the NEA are penny-wise, pound-foolish. I asked him to expand on that thought and the importance of national support for the arts. When the budget came out today, you did issue a statement in which you said that cutting the NEA, among other aspects, is penny-wise but pound-foolish. Can you expand a little bit on that, on your thoughts on that?
I am the Republican chair of both the Arts Caucus and the Humanities Caucus in the House of Representatives. And from an economic perspective, the modest amount of federal funding for these agencies has a terrific multiplier effect economically as a commerce occurs as a result of arts and humanities funding. Tax revenues come into our coffers as a result of that, and I will be arguing as strongly as possible in the coming months in support of continuing funding in the appropriations process.
Now, in addition to the economic benefits, overall, why do you feel that the arts are worth federal investment?
Obviously, it's an important component of our larger society, and we need a nation that includes the arts. It's also very important economically, and to those of us who are on the Republican side of the aisle, I'll certainly be arguing the economic benefits of this modest amount of federal funding. I also think that it is a civilizing force in the United States. But to Republican colleagues, I will be arguing both, accenting the strong economic benefits that occur.
Now, there have been past efforts to defund or trim the budget of the NEA. What, if anything, is different this time?
There was an attempt 20 years ago or so to defund these organizations. That attempt was unsuccessful, and I'm hopeful that that attempt will be unsuccessful this time. Of course, I cannot predict the future, but I will do my best to make sure that funding is included in the appropriations process, and that occurs later this year. And I am pleased that the chairman of the Appropriations Committee in the House of Representatives is my friend and colleague from New Jersey, Congressman Frelinghuysen, and he has been a strong supporter of these programs, and I hope and expect that he will be moving forward.
Well, given the mood in Congress and in general across the country with such strong partisanship that's been coming out, what do you think is going to help create bipartisan support around particularly this particular issue?
I think it's important for residents in congressional districts throughout the country to contact their member of the House of Representatives. The arts exist in all states and in all congressional districts, and I am hopeful that concerned residents throughout congressional districts across America will indicate to their representative in the House of Representatives that this is important and that there is a tremendous multiplier effect economically.
What's next on your to-do plan regarding this? How strongly do you feel you're going to have to fight to ensure that some funding is included in the budget?
The budget document is merely a blueprint and does not appropriate any funding. That is done through the appropriations process later in the year. And I urge constituents to reach out to members of Congress, and I certainly will be discussing this with members in my capacity as the Republican chair of the Arts Caucus.
One of the arguments that's often made from particularly the conservative side is that arts should be something that is financed and supported strictly, like many other things, through the free market. Why do you think that's not enough? Why do we need the additional support?
there is a tremendous multiplier effect, and we who are interested in federal expenditures and trying to balance the budget recognize, I hope we recognize, that this is a net plus economically to federal tax coffers because of the multiplier effect. And certainly the federal government is involved in many other areas, and these areas include matters that lead to greater federal revenue through taxation that occurs from the private sector as the result of attendant commerce related to the arts.
That was U.S. Representative Leonard Lance, a Republican from New Jersey, who co-chairs the Congressional Arts Caucus along with U.S. Representative Louise Slaughter, a Democrat from New York. Slaughter pointed to an NEA-supported project that brings the arts to veterans at Walter Reed National Military Medical Center as just one example of the way the arts can contribute to society and individual well-being, something that legislators on both sides of the aisle can appreciate.
I do believe, and my own judgment is, that there is enough support, bipartisan support, for us to save the National Endowment. We're asking for $155 million. It brings back between $5 and $7 billion a year into Treasury. We don't make any other investment like that. But I think one of the things that's most important that we didn't know much about before is what now the combination of military hospitals and art has done for the returning wounded veterans. We're able to get them off all that medicine that they live in. They can rejoin their families and society because of art. They found that yoga, is why PTSD responds better to that than anything they've done. By teaching them to write and express themselves, they can take out the things that happen to them and deal with them. And that is one of the most important things that we could do for the returning veteran. Everything in the world we can to make it right for them so they can continue their lives.
Well, now you said that it sounds like you will be able to... That we will be able to see bipartisan support. Given the polarity of politics in almost every issue really has seems to have such sharp divides, what makes you feel that the arts may be one place where people will come together in a bipartisan way?
I will tell you, it's an absolute turnaround. Back in the days of Maple Fork, it was worth our lives to just even try to save it. But now I think people understand the economic benefits from it. Certainly the mayors and the governor's conferences both understand what it means to their states and their communities. That art programs, whatever they put into them, comes back and manyfold. And in addition to making people smarter and better, it's an economic boon to and we can prove that day after day of what arts programs do in communities. And I don't think anybody was really anxious to try to give that up. But there's so many ways we can come at it. From the humanitarian way to what we owe our veterans, to what we owe our school children. And it's good for us to understand as well that sometimes art may offend us, but it doesn't need to apologize.
Well, now you mentioned the program working with particularly Walter Reed Hospital.
Oh, yes.
What have you seen come out of that?
I have seen soldiers being able to give up their boxes of medicine they carry around with them, and in that effluvia of drugs that they live in, and rejoin their families and rejoin society. But we've known that for a long time. I don't know why we never really put it together with the veterans community before, but we knew that a long time ago, because I remember I chaired Public Safety Committee legislature and also worked on criminal justice in state legislature, and I would see young people with those dead eyes that and we discovered even then, if we gave them access to paper and pencil or something to draw or to paint or to do, that often opening up the other side of their brain, they were able to take out what many of them had seen and had not been able to adjust to and deal with it. I've seen that with kids as young as 5 and 6 years old in New York, in a program where kids were doing collage, and one little 5-year-old boy turned to a perfect stranger, another little boy next to him, started to cry and said, "Did I tell you my brother was killed?" And I'm confident that's probably the first time he had really taken that out and been able to look at it and discuss out loud what had happened to him, what he had been through. And that's the beginning of healing.
What are you hearing specifically from arts organizations in your district?
We've had great symbiotic relationship here forever. Eastman Music School is here, which is one of the best, I guess, the best music school in the world. And we have lots of artists, but they're everywhere. It's not, my district is not unusual. Great artists doing great things everywhere. I spoke to a group of mayors, about 40 mayors, about 2 weeks ago who were in Washington. And the mayor of Bremerton, Oregon, said to me, I hope I've gotten that right, he was building his art complex in his town and what he expected to come from that and how good it was and how he would be happy to talk about it, what it meant. What it meant to everybody. A very famous singer was in Rochester with me last fall. And we stopped by the Eastman School on a Sunday afternoon. And there were about 20 persons singing. They were all singing in Russian. The music was so beautiful. It just grabs you by the heart. And my guest was crying so hard that tears were coming between her fingers, and we were all searching for something for her to cry into. That letting go of what's holding you, you know, the pressure we're under now, the stress we're under all now, to have something like that that can help let us relieve that for a little while is immeasurable.
That was U.S. Representative Louise Slaughter, a Democrat from New York and co-chair of the Congressional Arts Caucus. Information on Arts Advocacy Day can be found at americansforthearts.org. So what exactly does the NEA fund? Among its grants include funding for projects that promote engagement and accessibility between arts organizations and their surrounding communities, encourage communities to bring the arts into public spaces, foster educational initiatives, and bring the arts to those in society who have traditionally been underserved, often because of socioeconomic status or their geography. Beyond that, it also funds each state's Art Council, which in turn can provide additional support to organizations, large and small, across their respective states. In New Jersey, recent NEA grants have funded opera performances by the Princeton Festival, the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra's Winter Festival, and NJ Champ's String Instrument Instruction Program for Newark students, and supporting tourism promotions for the arts communities throughout Cape May, Princeton, Newark, and Trenton. This past year alone, Westminster Choir College of Rider University has put together two community-oriented programs, in part with the help of funding from the NEA. Last fall, Westminster introduced students from several New Jersey middle schools to early recording technology at Thomas Edison National Historic Park in West Orange, as well as some opera performances as part of the Opera Then and Now project. This also included a related school curriculum developed by music education students at Westminster. Next month, Westminster will stage a performance of the Pulitzer Prize-winning oratorio Anthracite Fields by Julia Wolf at the Old Roebling Wireworks in Trenton, featuring Bang on a Can and a multimedia presentation that brings together students as well as other members of the community. The program will draw connections between the stories of the coal miners and their families portrayed in the work with the industrial cities that once depended on this industry. According to Matthew Scheftel, Dean of Writers Westminster College of the Arts, funding from the NEA played an important role in helping these projects get off the ground. I spoke with him about how the college and other music organizations have used NEA funds to support their projects, particularly those that enable them to work within the broader community around them.
We are working on major groundbreaking projects that really link community and education and world-class arts, art excellence in a really special way. Looking at how do we transform community, because that's really our vision. And the New Jersey State Council of the Arts and the NEA are really cornerstones in helping those projects to move forward. The NEA grants are relatively small, but even those small amounts are so significant to arts organizations like us. We make every last dollar meet multiple purposes. Which is why I think we are so successful with those grants. They're so incredibly competitive that the people who are using them are really trying to make sure that those dollars matter. So again, when we talk about a project like the one coming up on April 21st and 22nd, where we're doing the Anthracite Fields project, we're doing a Pulitzer Prize-winning work. We're bringing in world-class Grammy-nominated artists. We're creating a full multimedia experience for, and we're doing an art competition all at the same time in the Roebling Wireworks Factory, transforming a space, but at the same time looking to transform community. So we're bringing in about 600 school kids from Trenton and the Trenton region to experience this work. And we have a full curriculum that we've engaged the schools in and we're engaging the teachers in. This is a collaboration among numerous educators, numerous artists and artistic groups in the area. We're allowing for a huge number of free tickets to the community because really this is our chance to allow the arts to be the cornerstone for community and education. There's so much terrific evidence about this. And every dollar that we spend, even from these small grants, meets multiple objectives. So it has the educational objective, the artistic objective, the community objective. So a small grant goes a long way in the hands of the arts organizations that are lucky enough to earn such a grant. So it's really critical for us. You know, the NEA's funding is only about $150 million. And when you compare that, for instance, to the military bands budget, I'm sure this is an argument that gets bandied around a lot, but the military bands budget is $450 million. So the NEA doesn't have the kind of funding that really it could use in order to really be frivolous. Every dollar, again, has to be efficient. So when you think that the military bands budget is three times the NEA budget, it sort of puts things in perspective. I mean, the U.S. funding for the arts is roughly 10 times less, 10 times less than that of basically any major European country. It's about 10 times less than that of Canada. We're in such a different place, and yet because we can be super proud of how U.S. small arts organizations and universities spend those dollars, we can see that it makes a huge difference in our community. Mm. The Opera Then and Now project that we did in the fall, again, brought together community, brought together schools, a number of schools from underprivileged areas into the Edison State Park, where we explored recording technology through opera and the sort of founding of recording technology. And again, it included an entire curriculum that was beautiful in its way, in its arts, in its management of arts integration. So really integrating the arts and history and technology together, and the learning outcomes helped to elevate all three of those areas. So again, here you have a dollar spent not only changes the life of these school children who are getting to meet these multiple objectives in one event, but also changes the life of these future music educators who are going to go on and create these kind of community transformational projects. So efficiency is the name of the game, but you can't do it without the dollar in the first place. So I think that's where we have to be nervous in considering the potential that there won't be NEA funding in the future.
What would be some alternatives? Where would you have to look for funding to do exactly these types of projects?
I'll be honest, Rachel, I don't see an alternative for this kind of... if there were alternatives, we would be using them now. The truth is that there are other granting organizations, but private granting organizations are less and less likely to provide the kind of support that New Jersey State Council for the Arts or the NEA does. These private organizations are really interested largely in capital projects or in a particular kind of artistic project, but they aren't interested in the kind of community transformational work that that we're doing generally. Although I have to say, the project we're doing in Roebling has a number of granting partners, and it really is the cobbling of eight different grants that allows this project of this magnitude to go forward. But without the NEA and the New Jersey State Council for the Arts grants, the project couldn't happen. So what most organizations do is they try to take a little bit of this and a little bit of that to make ends meet, and that allows us to move forward. One possibility is that we could charge a great deal more for tickets, but that means that access is limited to only those people who can afford it. So we'd have smaller audiences. We would lose the whole community transformation mission of the project. And it would mean that only those with significant incomes could afford to take advantage of the arts. And that's really just so anathema to what we believe our mission is as a university, but really what the U.S. should be about is really providing equal opportunity and access. Equity and access are critical to community, and so are the arts. The arts are as essential to humans as water, as air, as shelter. You know, everybody has a place for the arts and in them. Just, you know, think about the universal power of something like music or the notion of design. Every person benefits from design. Every person benefits from thinking about movement. We've all experienced that. And to restrict that to the chosen few is really, it's really heartbreaking.
So what's next? Have you had a chance to talk to other colleagues about what approach you're taking as far as the next few months and seeing the budget process go through the way you think it should go through?
Obviously, the key is advocacy. Without advocacy in D.C., artist groups writing, concerned citizens writing to their legislators, we will see a radical shift in how the arts function in the United States. To think that that the public humanities and the arts could just disappear is just terrifying. I think about organizations like NPR, and we really, that is such a cornerstone of believable, true, even-handed news and information and artistic content. I mean, without those organizations, the arts become really a tool for marketing, and they become a tool for business. But they don't become you lose the notion of community and the people in it, and it's really, really disturbing. So advocacy is what we need. I hope that everybody will take a right to their legislators. That's what we are doing. We're trying to advocate and make sure that we're citing things that we know benefit from this funding. And again, citing the notion that it is sort of a duty of the government to provide support for community building across the nation through the arts.
That was Matthew Schaftel, Dean of Westminster College of the Arts at Rider University. You can read more about the Anthracite Fields Project at rider.edu/anthracite_fields. I hope you do appreciate the conversations I bring you each week on A Tempo, as well as all the other high-quality programs of the award-winning Classical Network. Remember that as a publicly supported radio station, we can only bring you these programs because of contributions from you, the listener. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for being a member of the global listening community that is the Classical Network. Thank you for joining me for A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. You can find an archive of recent shows anytime on our webcast page at wwfm.org. Join me next week for another look at the challenges and innovations facing the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of the listener members of the Classical Network.